We're studying in the book of Ezra in chapter 7. And as we started into chapter 7 last week, we noted that this chapter serves as a major change in the book as far as topics and time frames. So for the first six chapters, we studied about the return of the captives from Babylon and the rebuilding of the temple in Jerusalem. Well, chapter 7 is where we begin to learn about Ezra, the man, and who he was, and the work that he did. And so for the rest of the book of Ezra through chapter 10, so these next four chapters that we have to study from, tell us about Ezra himself, as the book bears his name, he being the one that God inspired these words through. And we are introduced to Ezra in chapter 7, and we read verses 1 through 5 last week that contains the genealogy of Ezra, which is particularly significant because Ezra was a priest of God, and therefore he, in order to be qualified to be a priest of the Lord under the law of Moses, he had to be a direct descendant of Aaron, the brother of Moses, the first high priest of Israel, as God had authorized and ordained for Aaron's sons to be priests and for no others to be. And that had to be proven from the genealogical records. And we saw back in chapter 2, in fact, with some of the captives that returned who did not have that particular proof from the records were put out from the priesthood. So for Ezra to serve as a priest of the Lord, he had to be able to, from the records, prove his descent from Aaron, his ancestry back to that high priest of the Lord. And that is what is provided in verses 1 through 5 to let us know from the record whom he descended from. And we also saw from that his descent from Aaron goes through Aaron's son Eleazar. There was only one other son of Aaron's that had children from which any priest could descend from, and that's Ithamar. So all of the priests of Israel would have to be able to prove their descent from Aaron, either through Eleazar or Ithamar. Nadab and Abihu were the first two sons of Aaron, but they were struck dead. That's recorded in the book of Leviticus, chapter 10, verses 1 and 2, when they offered strange fire before the Lord. They did not have children, so no descendants through Aaron's first two sons, but all of his descendants, therefore, came through either Eleazar or Ithamar. We've also noted before that Eli, the high priest, during the time where we begin to read about Samuel, when Samuel was born and became prophet of the Lord, that was during the days of Eli, the high priest, who was one that his house was descended from Ithamar. Well, later the Lord brought judgment on Eli's house, and the high priesthood then transferred to the house of Zadok, and his name is here in the lineage of Ezra. But the high priest Joshua, that was with Zerubbabel and led the captives back from Babylon and was instrumental in the work of rebuilding the temple, that Joshua was descended from Zadok. He was of the house of Zadok. So that family continued in the role of the high priest of Israel. But of course, all the other priests could still be from either descended from Eleazar or Ithamar. In the case of Ezra, He was descended from Eleazar and through Zadok. So he was of the same household, the same family, the house of Zadok that the high priest was from. And so that's the record that we have of Ezra as far as informing us about his family background and being a qualified priest of the Lord. So Ezra is a priest, and he's going to be given a very important job. And so the work that Ezra does that we're reading about now, it really is one of the three major works that had to be done when the captives came back to Israel. And we mentioned that last week, but just to review briefly, we have the rebuilding of the temple that's covered here in Ezra chapters 1 through 6. We have the book of Nehemiah that describes the work of the rebuilding of the walls of Jerusalem, that work being led by Nehemiah. And then we have Ezra's work, and that is to establish the teaching of God's law to the people in Israel that have now returned to the land. Because without that teaching, which is what God had given as the main job for the priest to do, and we looked at that last week, but their job was to teach God's law to the people so that they would know his word. They had failed many times, the priests had, in that work. And consequently, God's people became ignorant of the law of the Lord and were destroyed by that lack of knowledge. And the priests were condemned for that previously. That was one of the major contributors to the spiritual decline in Israel that occurred, that led to the destruction of Jerusalem and the temple in the first place, and where only a remnant survived that was preserved in captivity in Babylon. So that without Ezra doing the work that he's going to be doing here, and if the priests are not teaching the people God's word like they need to so that they would know the law of the Lord, then they're going to be very susceptible to going astray again and having a repeat of that same cycle that we have seen many times in Israel's history. So Ezra is going to try to avert that problem and to fulfill the purpose that God had for the priest, to be teaching his word to the people of Israel. So Ezra is going to be the leader in that, to reestablish the spiritual leadership for the people of Israel now that they're back in the land. So we in verse 6 here in Ezra chapter 7 and verse 6, we'll read now verses 6 through 10 that describe this work. But it says that this Ezra went up from Babylon, and he was a ready scribe in the law of Moses, which the Lord God of Israel had given. And the king granted him all his request according to the hand of the Lord his God upon him. And there went up some of the children of Israel and of the priests and the Levites and the singers and the porters and the Nethinims unto Jerusalem in the seventh year of Artaxerxes the king. And he came to Jerusalem in the fifth month, which was in the seventh year of the king. For upon the first day of the first month began he to go up from Babylon, and on the first day of the fifth month came he to Jerusalem according to the good hand of his God upon him. For Ezra had prepared his heart to seek the law of the Lord and to do it, and to teach in Israel statutes and judgments. So there's a description in verse 10 as we reach that point that tells us the job that he was going to do, to teach in Israel statutes and judgments. But before he could do that job, there were other things that had to be done to prepare for that. Of course, he went there with the authority of the the Persian government, as it tells us there in verse 6, as was the case with the captives when Cyrus sent them back originally. And of course, Cyrus's decree, it authorized all of the children of Israel to go back to the land of Israel. And so they were given that charge by Cyrus himself. Now this is, by the time Ezra goes back here in the time here of Artaxerxes, the king, Cyrus is gone. And after Cyrus was gone, did the subsequent rulers, were they all up to speed as far as their knowledge of all the decrees that were made by Cyrus, their predecessor? And the answer was no. They didn't all know all of those things, and they kept records of them, because that issue came up when they were rebuilding the temple. Because after Cyrus was gone, those Samaritans that were neighbors of the Jews who returned to the land of Israel, they were none too pleased about their return and for them to rebuild the city of Jerusalem and the temple. And so when they started that, they did everything they could to thwart and stop the work. And one of the methods that they used to do that was to write letters to the Persian government accusing the Jews of being rebels, that they were going to rebuild and then become a threat to the Persian rulership in that part of the world that they reigned over, which was a false accusation. They used the rebellion that took place in the time of the Babylonians under Nebuchadnezzar, which that was that an event that occurred. That was God's punishment to bring the Babylonians against them for that rebellion and their rebellion against the Lord. But they were not going to be rebelling against Persia, so that was the false accusation that was in there. But because those rulers who were in power now after Cyrus, they were not aware of the decree that Cyrus had made to send those Israelites back and to commission them to rebuild the temple and even provide the financial assistance for that work. And so they had the work to be stopped. Point being, we've seen an example of this. Of course, we know when Darius became king, he reauthorized that and to have the temple completed after the search of the records was made and Cyrus's decree was found. So we could ask the question here as we're reading verse 6 in chapter 7, where it says that the king granted Ezra all his requests according to the hand of the Lord his God upon him. Did Ezra actually need that legally to go back and to do what he desired to do in the land of Israel? The argument could be made he had the authorization from the decree that Cyrus had made well before this time, yet we've already seen that without the the current Persian government being aware of those things and agreeing to it, that could be a hindrance, as it was for a time in the work of the rebuilding of the temple. So did it help that God granted Ezra, in this essence, a repeat of the authorization that he would have legally had to go back to Israel to do this work? He did have that authority from Cyrus's decree, but to have the current rulers to agree to and authorize him to do this was something that was not only helpful, but really would have been necessary, so that he obtained that. And who was the one that was working, number one, with Cyrus to give that decree that he made in the first place for the Jews to go back and rebuild the temple? And we know that was God that did that. So God was the one that worked through Cyrus, And then with the other rulers down through Darius, that God, when he had them to search the records and find that, and then had Darius to reauthorize that based on what Cyrus had done and finding the record there. I mean, God was the one that did all of that, and he was the one that deserved the credit for doing that. And that was something that we also saw, that the Lord said in the summary of chapter 6, after the temple was rebuilt, how that it was the Lord that had made that work to be possible and had caused that work to be done, because it told us in the last verse of chapter 6 that the Lord turned the heart of the king of Assyria unto them to strengthen their hands in the work of the house of God, the God of Israel. So God was the one that moved Cyrus and put in his heart to make that decree that he did in the beginning of the book of Ezra. He was the one that was working through these rulers and turning their hearts all the way to seeing through the completion of the work of rebuilding the temple. And now the same God is with Ezra to bless him in the work that he has Ezra to do. And so it was according to the hand of the Lord his God upon him, upon Ezra, that he was able to go back without any hindrance, with the full consent and agreement of the Persian government, to return with these other ones that went with him. And obviously these were some who had not gone back originally in Cyrus's time with Zerubbabel and Joshua and the others that returned at that time. And there were many of these priests and Levites and the singers and porters and Nethinims that went back then. And that was all listed in chapter 2 of this book. But here's another wave of them returning. So we know that the 50,000 or whatever that went back originally, those aren't the only ones that ever returned. So there were more that migrated back to Israel over time, and we just see another example of this. When Ezra goes back, there are these other ones in verse 7 that he mentions that went up with him of the children of Israel. So there were other Israelites and priests, Levites, singers, porters, and Nethinims that went back to Jerusalem there in the seventh year of Artaxerxes the king. He arrived in the fifth month of that seventh year of the king, it says. He started his journey in verse 9 on the first day of the first month, and he got there on the first day of the fifth month. So that really gives a very... a very finite description of what the journey would have been like, just in terms of time. I mean, we're used to going places and covering very long distances in a pretty short amount of time. I mean, I remember in all the traveling that I did for many years back and forth from here to India. That's on the exactly on the other side of the world, and there were times when we did that in as we had various flights with their layovers, and some, I mean, it would take a couple of days to do that, and we would feel all worn out and think, boy, it took 2 days to get here. But for us to think in our time for taking 2 days to go to the exact other side of the earth. You know, what would people who lived back in Ezra's time think about me griping about being tired for having taken 2 days to get around the other side of the world? How long did it take them to journey from Babylon? And you can look at a map today. I mean, that would correspond to present day Iraq, if you were journeying from there all the way over to Israel, which is adjacent to the Mediterranean Sea, I mean, we would look at that and on a map of the earth, it doesn't look like a very long journey. I mean, it's certainly not to the other side of the world, the actual earth. However, it is rough country over there, desert and all of that. But for the journey in that time to go from where they were, from Babylon to the land of Israel, how long did it take them to cover that ground? That was a four-month journey. That's roughly along the lines of, I mean, we know from our, which much more recent history, but if you go back to the 1800s when settlers were making journeys to the west, and we've all heard of the Oregon Trail, and well, there are a lot of people that their wagon trains that when they would leave St. Louis or Kansas City and Missouri to then journey out to the west coast, how long did it take those pioneers and their wagon trains to cover the Oregon Trail from Kansas City to Oregon? That was about a 4 to 6 month journey on average. Some it took longer. So when and for us today, I mean, that's only halfway across the United States. If you did that on an interstate today, I mean, you could cover that probably in two very long days of driving, maybe three if you were not pushing it as hard. But for back just in the 1800s here, that would be months to cover that ground over that terrain. Well, it just puts it into more of a perspective, doesn't it? So when we read about these captives coming back from Babylon, we don't want to think of it through our experiences of nowadays and what traveling is like now for us. This lets us know and puts us into some more accurate perspective what it would have been like for them. And this is minus all the details of what would have gone on in that 4 months. I mean, traveling through desert regions, I mean, where did they stop? And what would that mean as far as finding water? Where would their way stations have been? And for getting their animals and all of their, what would the roads have been like? And I mean, it's when he says it was a four-month journey, I mean, there's a reason it took that long. Point being, that was not an easy trip to make. Now, we read earlier, this would have been the same journey that those ones with Zerubbabel and Joshua that they had made, that 50,000 that went back when Cyrus gave that decree that he made in his first year after, as emperor, after he'd conquered Babylon, and they went back there. And that included some people that had spent 70 years in captivity in Babylon, but had started off in Israel and were old enough to have remembered the original temple before it was destroyed. And then they made that journey too. So think about those ones who would have been well into their 80s or older, some of them that were physically able to make that journey. I mean, imagine some of these ones that were in their 80s or 90s that made that four-month trip across all of that desert and through those hardships for the day. Yeah. Mountains and desert, but 600 miles, 4 months. I mean, like if you're thinking of Kansas City to Oregon, that's going to be probably about double that, but that would be 4 to 6 months just back in the 1800s here. I mean, traveling now is not what it used to be, is it? Whether it's overland or airplanes or whatever. I mean, it's a different, completely different situation from what we normally think about. Now, I have been in some places that are in the past that were where we did some traveling that was not quite up to what we're used to. So it's not all easy everywhere, even today, but still nothing like this. Brother Dave, five miles a day. Yeah. So, and then think of these ones that were in their 80s and 90s that were covering that ground at that time under those conditions. There had to be a strong will to go back to that land, to be there in the land that the Lord had given to them, for them to attempt or go through that journey. So that required more than just a light or small desire or inclination to go back to Israel. I mean, here they're going to be leaving the only place that they've, most of them by far, would have ever had any experience with, to leave that behind forever, make this kind of a journey to go to a place most of them had never been before, had no memory of. So there was a lot of dedication to that. And they had to have faith in the Lord to desire to please Him and to attempt a trip like this. And so that's what Ezra did, and these ones who went with him. And so here's another wave of these ones who are returning to the land. And he arrives there, and who was the one that got them there safely? Because it says he arrived there on the first day of the fifth month, and came to Jerusalem, it says, according to the good hand of his God upon him. And they were trusting that the Lord would bring them there safely. Of all the, I mean, we can just think of the different dangers or problems that would have been around back then. And I mean, just being in desert areas, mountain areas, I mean, all the things to do with food and water and all those kinds of things. And they're taking care of their animals, but there were also dangers around. I mean, there could have been people in various areas that could have attempted to prey upon them. There could have also, I mean, there were a lot of wild animals around. I mean, we read in several places in the Bible with, they still had lions, the Asian lions still had lived in that area and during that time. So, I mean, you had, I mean, that's certainly not anything that I've ever had to be, to calculate into a journey I was planning of whether I might be running across a lion out in the open where I had no protection. I mean, there was a lot that went into this that we probably would take for granted if we're not thinking about it. But for them to go through all of the things that they had to face in that, and different dangers and everything, it was God's good hand upon them that got them through that journey. But that's always the case. And if we're going to be able to do anything, live or do this or that, it's if the Lord wills and if His good hand is upon us. So we can see how God, it tells us how God's hand, His good hand was upon Ezra, not just with the having the backing, the approval of the Persian government for these more of these captives to return to Israel, but also for them to make that treacherous journey that they did, and to do so safely. God did all of that for them and got them there. So, and we know that, and the reason we're mentioning all this, and God's making a point about it right there, and we want to remember that and learn from it, because whatever is going on in our lives, if we want to go here to such and such a place or live or do this or that, I mean, how are we going to do it if it's not the Lord's will, and if it's not His good hand upon us to make it possible and to give us the life and the safekeeping and everything else we need to be able to do anything. So we don't want to take that for granted. That's why we should speak that way. If the Lord wills, we will live or do this or that. That's why we need to thank Him for everything that He blesses us with. I mean, we all got here, those of us that are here right now, we all got here today very safely. We're alive and well at this moment and here assembled together on this first day of the week. Well, it was God's good hand upon us that we're here right now, just like this. And we need to remember that. And we have so much to be thankful to Him for, and also to continue to ask Him for to enable us to do all of these things that we would like to do to serve Him. Well, there's also what he mentions in verse 10. For Ezra to do the work that he was to do, to teach in Israel statutes and judgments, the law of God to the people, for him to do that, well, yes, he needed the blessings of the Persian rulers, which God granted him. He also needed to be able to journey safely from Babylon to Israel, because if he doesn't get from point A to point B, he can't do it. Well, God got him through that too. But there's also the preparation that Ezra had to do himself for that work. And so verse 10 here says that Ezra had prepared his heart. Now we see that phrase used a number of times in the scriptures, and as one of the necessary actions that we all have to do, not just one time in our lives, but this is something that we need to be continually doing, so that we are able to accomplish God's will in our lives, and one day we'll be able to have eternal life. We have to prepare our hearts to seek and serve Him. And we remember the examples of some who did not do that, and what happened as a result of it. That's one that we have the example of Rehoboam in 2 Chronicles chapter 12, the son of Solomon. King of Rehoboam became the first king of Judah as a divided kingdom. So after Solomon's death, his son Rehoboam, he desired to inherit his father's kingdom and ruling over all 12 tribes of Israel. That was not the will of God. God had promised as a punishment for the idolatry of Solomon that he had fallen into because he hearkened to his wives that he married that were children of God, and he turned to idols for a time. But also the nation did, and so God had chosen as a punishment that he was going to separate the kingdom. He was going to preserve for David's sake. He was going to preserve the throne of David through Solomon's descendants. That's going to be Rehoboam. But they only had the tribe of Judah with the tribe of Benjamin to rule over. The other 10 tribes were under separate kings as a separate kingdom, and remained so until that northern kingdom of those 10 tribes eventually were destroyed by the Assyrians. And that started with Jeroboam, the son of Nebat. But Rehoboam, when he became king over the southern kingdom, with the 10 of the tribes having followed after Jeroboam, so Rehoboam followed the Lord for... it tells us that he followed the Lord for 3 years, doing the Lord's will. So that was a good start, but unfortunately it did not endure. So Rehoboam had been forbidden by God from fighting for the to try to bring, force the 10 tribes that followed Rehoboam from going back under his reign. And that's in chapter 2 Chronicles chapter 11, verse 4. It says, "Thus saith the Lord, you shall not go up nor fight against your brethren. Return every man to his house, for this thing is done of me." And they obeyed the words of the Lord and returned from going against Jeroboam. So there was no civil war at that time. So Rehoboam listened to God. God told him plainly that that was from him, and the kingdom was to remain divided. So he did not go up and fight Jeroboam at that time to try to force them to be under his reign. Then it tells us in verse 16 that, well, a little bit before that, verse 13 here in 2 Chronicles 11, that the priests and the Levites that were in all Israel, that's in the northern kingdom now, resorted to him, that is to Rehoboam, out of all their coasts. For the Levites left their suburbs and their possession and came to Judah and Jerusalem, for Jeroboam and his sons had cast them off from executing the priest office unto the Lord, and he ordained him priest for the high places and for the devils and for the calves which he had made. So when Jeroboam established his own religion for his kingdom to try to prevent them from going to Jerusalem three times a year in accordance with the commandments of God by the law of Moses, what did the ones who were desiring to follow the Lord that were in that among those 10 tribes, what did they do? If they're being, as they were, forbidden from following what God had commanded, and now they were given a false religion to follow, what did they do? They left. And so it's describing there how many of these people, the ones who were going to seek the Lord and serve him, left that kingdom that was now ruled by Jeroboam. Verse 15 says, and he ordained him, verse 16 says, and after them, out of all the tribes of Israel, such as set their hearts to seek the Lord God of Israel came to Jerusalem to sacrifice unto the Lord God of their fathers. So they strengthened the kingdom of Judah and made Rehoboam the son of Solomon strong 3 years. For 3 years, they walked in the way of David and Solomon. So it was a great start, 3 years. The problem is that it was only for 3 years. If they had continued, if Rehoboam had continued in what he was doing right, walking in the way of David and Solomon, if he had continued that and didn't stop after 3 years, he would have been spiritually fine. But that's not what happened. So then he forsook the Lord after that. Chapter 12, 2 Chronicles 12, verse 1 says, "It came to pass when Rehoboam had established the kingdom and had strengthened himself, he forsook the law of the Lord and all Israel with him." So after 3 years, that's what he did. He did not maintain his obedience and his faithfulness in following God beyond those 3 years. He turned away from him after that. So the question is, well, what was the reason? Why did he turn away after 3 years? What was the problem there? There's a lesson to be learned. We don't want to just do that for 3 years, do right for 3 years or 30 years or any amount of time and then stop, because it doesn't matter how many years we do right if we forsake the Lord and then turn away from him and stop obeying him, and we leave this earth in a state of rebellion against him. Is God going to bring us into heaven because we did what was right for a while? No, that's not the way the Lord works. He tells us that if we forsake him, he'll forsake us. So Rehoboam went astray. It tells us why, starting in verse 13. It says, "So King Rehoboam strengthened himself in Jerusalem and reigned, for Rehoboam was 140 years old when he began to reign, and he reigned 17 years in Jerusalem, the city which the Lord had chosen out of all the tribes of Israel to put his name there. And his mother's name was Naamah, an Ammonitess. And he did evil." Why? "Because he prepared not his heart to seek the Lord." So there the Lord tells us the reason why he went astray from God. It's because he had not prepared his heart to seek the Lord. Without that preparation of the heart to seek God, think of Rehoboam's upbringing. I mean, he had Solomon as an example. And yes, that did include during what would have been much of Rehoboam's formative years, when Solomon had forsaken the Lord himself. Yet Solomon repented of that. We have all that's in the book of Ecclesiastes with all the lessons learned there. "Vanity of vanities, all is vanity," saith the preacher. Anything other than to fear God and keep his commandments, which is the whole duty of man, the conclusion of the whole matter, which is at the end of the book of Ecclesiastes in chapter 12, verse 13, everything else is vanity. It's all in vain. And Solomon understood, being given all of the wisdom that he had been given and all of the wealth he was given, and he experienced all of the wealth and pleasures of this life, and he understood from after having all of that and experiencing all of that, that other than fearing God and keeping his commandments, all else is vanity. Of course, we have the book of Ecclesiastes, which was given through God through Solomon for all mankind forever. Did those words reach his son's ears, Rehoboam's ears? Would Solomon have warned his son, "All is vanity and vexation of spirit. Don't follow after all of this. Here's the conclusion of the whole matter. Fear God and keep his commandments. This is the whole of man." Well, obviously he would have done that. I mean, that would have been, starting with his household, that's where he would have started. I mean, we have the Proverbs that record for us through Solomon how he mentions, especially Proverbs chapter 4, how David, Solomon's father, taught him that wisdom is the principal thing. And with all his getting of wisdom, also get understanding, that they will preserve you. And don't turn from the right hand to the left. I mean, we have all of that in Proverbs chapter 4 that David taught Solomon. Well, so Solomon was very mindful of the importance and of the father teaching the son these spiritual what is necessary spiritually for one's soul. And he would have done that for Rehoboam when he repented for certain, without doubt. And would that have helped Rehoboam? Well, for 3 years after Solomon dies, he's following the Lord. But how long, if you have the encouragement from someone else, their example, their words, whether it's your own family or other brethren, which it's look at how good that is. Here's a man that didn't prepare his heart to seek the Lord, yet the encouragement through a righteous father helped him to go in the right direction. For a time, he had a chance because of that. And that's why it's we can help each other a lot. We need to, with encouragement to do right from our families, especially through one another, our brethren. But if that's all that's sustaining us, and we're not preparing our own hearts to seek God, if we're not putting in that effort to prepare ourselves and doing all that we need to do, having the zeal to know the Lord and his word and his ways, if we're not giving all diligence, studying to show ourselves approved unto God, a workman that need not be ashamed and rightly dividing the word of truth, if we're not doing that, if we're not learning God's will and applying ourselves to do it, how long is the encouragement of everybody else going to sustain us? Is that going to get us through to the end? If we're not doing what we have to do to prepare our own hearts, well, we have that warning about Rehoboam. That's why he forsook the Lord. Solomon wasn't around anymore. And we're all going to face times where we're not going to have somebody over us. Okay, now you've got to do what's right here. Remember what the Lord said. We may remember the words of encouragement from others, but we've got to stand ourselves and based on our own love of God and our own desire to do what's right and please Him, not from merely from everybody else that may have encouraged us to do that. We've got to prepare our own hearts to seek the Lord. Without that, we'll end up where Rehoboam did. We'll go astray. And we can see Ezra prepared his heart to seek the law of the Lord. I mean, that was number one. How was he going to be suitable and fit to teach in Israel statutes and judgments if he wasn't one who had prepared his own heart to seek the Lord and to seek his law, to know his word, to study it diligently? So that's where he started, and that's where we all have to start. That's where Rehoboam went wrong, but this is where Ezra went right. He did that. He prepared his heart to seek the law of the Lord, as we must do. That's part of what is absolutely necessary and essential for us to be able to carry forth and accomplish the will of God in our lives. We do need encouragement from others, from one another, but we must also prepare our hearts to seek Him, to be able to do it. We're out of time, so we'll stop there this morning and continue. We've got more to look at in verse 10, where we'll try to resume our study, Lord willing, next week. But let's go now to our Heavenly Father in prayer as we close.